606.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoi, and this is The Exchange. It was just a few short weeks ago that last-minute, edge-of-your-seat budget negotiations gave way to a hearty round of bipartisan congratulations at the Statehouse, as the New Hampshire State Legislature passed a $10.7 billion biennial budget and sent it on to Governor Maggie Hassan for her signature. Democrats could take heart in the restoration of money in the budget, crucial to their funding of education and mental health priorities. And Republicans could cheer their own success at holding the line on revenue, even in the face of proposals for increasing both the gas and cigarette taxes. But challenges remain for two of the governor's key priorities, the expansion of Medicaid and the fate of casino gambling in the Granite State. Legislators will revisit Medicaid expansion later this fall, while it's back to the drawing board for casino supporters. And what about the struggle to repair New Hampshire's roads and bridges? Legislators will face these questions and many more, just as the 2014 midterm election season heats up. Today on The Exchange, a roundtable of House and Senate leaders reflects on the legislative session just completed and on what's still to come. What do you think were the high points and low points of the last legislative session? Are you pleased with the level of bipartisan cooperation being exhibited and conquered? Which unresolved legislative issues are of greatest concern to you? How do you feel about the big-ticket items of Medicaid expansion and casino gambling? Let's hear from you. You can call into The Exchange. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page. And we have a big roundtable for you this morning. It's a full House and Senate, so to speak. Joining me in studio for the hour are Senator Sylvia Larson. She's a Democratic Senate Minority Leader from Concord. Senator Larson, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning.
Representative Mary Jane Wallner, Democratic representative from Concord and chairwoman of the House Finance Committee. And Mary Jane, welcome back to The Exchange.
Good morning, Dean.
Senator Peter Bragdon, Republican State Senate President from Milford. Senator Bragdon, welcome to The Exchange.
Good to be here.
And finally, Representative Jean Chandler, Republican House Minority Leader from Bartlett. And Representative Chandler, welcome back to The Exchange.
Good morning.
I'd like to start with going around the table here and asking each of you to briefly give me your personal highlight from the last session and also what you think was your biggest missed opportunity as well. And Representative Chandler, let me start with you.
Oh, sure. Start on this side. Well, I think obviously since it was a budget session, I think from our standpoint as Republicans in the House and being in the minority, obviously the budget that passed the House was not something that we were particularly enamored with. As a matter of fact, every House Republican voted against that budget. But we worked hard, in a civil way, to bring forth what we thought should be changed in the budget and offered some amendments and things. And then the Senate worked hard and the House conferees worked hard and came up with, I think, a very good budget. So I think that would have to be perhaps the highlight, since it is a budget year. And there was a lot of talk about there being some lingering problems and perhaps not reaching an agreement. So I think that was very good. Capital budget, which kind of flies under the radar screen, went pretty smoothly. And a lot of important projects for the state in there, building. It'll create a lot of jobs, get a lot of the infrastructure improvements. So I think those are the big things.
Any disappointments or missed opportunities?
We have disappointments, but we don't have many missed opportunities being in the minority, because we don't get an opportunity to do too much.
Well said.
So, you know, there were some things. And being in the minority, we were there to try to point out some things that we felt were wrong as we went along and bills we didn't agree with. But other than that, we'll try to focus on and have some things to bring up this fall, I think, and to get them in the forefront and just continue to work at those.
Senator Larson?
Well, I think the high point for me, of course, is the budget and the fact that we came into the budget knowing that we need to address mental health needs, knowing that we were aiming to freeze university tuitions and help students attend higher education. So many of the features of the budget, as we were hoping, or many of the issues that we knew needed to be addressed, were addressed in Governor Hassan's proposed budget, which I'm really glad to report were retained as we went through. In fact, they weren't particularly debated. Those weren't some of the issues that got the heaviest debate. Children in need of services, we heard from many parents that that needed to be in the budget. And so we were happy in mid-February to hear that we were going to have those things in the budget proposal, and they survived both the House and the Senate with some changes, but generally everyone agreed it wasn't something we needed to address. And certainly job development and job creation was one of our goals, and we were able to include research and development. We reinforced the auto dealers in our state and their ability to have some local control over the Detroit manufacturers' edicts. And the other celebration, I would say the high point, is today we'll be signing a bill that's called Pathway to Work, which will help unemployed people who want to start their own businesses. It will help them with a business plan and set them on a path towards self-employment, which will, I hope, lead to them hiring more people, because that's the way we support things in their state.
Missed opportunities?
Missed opportunities, I think. One, we saw the opportunity for $2.5 billion in Medicaid expansion. It could have relieved some of the money that we were using in uncompensated care. We had to put general funds into hospitals to offset their charitable care. We didn't have to do that, perhaps as heavy a level, if we had accepted Medicaid expansion early. But we all know, I think many people know, we're going to study that issue, and that was one which was delayed, but hopefully not deterred and destroyed. And the other missed opportunity, I think, is a lot of people contacted us on – oftentimes the Senate can pass resolutions. And in the Senate, there was a decision from the Senate leadership not to allow resolutions into the Senate without a two-thirds vote. And things like Citizens United, where we wanted to send a message to Washington that corporations are not people and that we don't want corporations advertising to us. Mm-hmm. That resolution ban, I think, was a sorry day in the Senate because it historically has been a way that we communicate with Washington and amongst ourselves on our priorities as a state.
Representative Wallner,
Thank you. Well, the highlight for me, of course, was passing the budget.
You're intimately involved.
I was intimately involved, being the chair of the Finance Committee in the House. And I was happy at the end that we were able to come together. Not everyone got everything they wanted, of course, and not everyone was completely pleased with the way the budget came out. But I think that the Senate and the House were able to come together and work through a lot of issues. The governor started us out with what I think was a really good foundation, a budget that included funding for our mental health system, funding for the developmental disabilities wait list, universities and community colleges funding, restoring the funding to those education facilities. And I think that with that foundation, we were really able to move forward. And as Senator Larson said, those things survived right to the end and really had very little debate as we went through. For me, one of the things that I feel I regret is that we were not able to pass Medicaid expansion in the budget. It was in the House budget. We had done a lot of work in the House around Medicaid expansion. We had had a lot of information. We had really done a lot of study of it. And I understand that the Senate needed a little more time, and we were able to put in a commission that's studying it for the next two and a half months, and hopefully we will be moving forward soon.
I just want to mention briefly to our listeners, you can call in at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also send us a short email at exchange@nhpr.org. And we're having a roundtable today of legislative leaders. Senator Bragdon, your reactions to the session, a highlight or two and a missed opportunity or two.
Well, thank you, Dean. I think I agree with my colleagues here that the budget being passed was certainly a highlight. We came into the session with a goal of passing a budget where we lived within our means, didn't raise taxes, and used realistic revenue numbers to base those assumptions on, so we didn't get ourselves into the problems we've seen in the past. And I think we achieved that goal. So that to me is the biggest highlight. And the budget, the 2-year budget, really lays the foundation for all the state's work for the next 2 years. So it's a very important document. In terms of missed opportunities, the thing that first comes to mind is really a local issue for me, representing the town of Merrimack, is the folks in the town of Merrimack have been paying tolls to access the F.E. Everett Turnpike for 20-something years. When the turnpike started, it had 2 exits. Now it has 27, and only one town has had to pay for their access to the turnpike. Even others who requested it get it built for free. And Merrimack has always had to pay for it, even as other people drive by them using it for free. So tried to put some toll relief in. It got through the Senate, did not make it through the House. And so we'll try and pick that up again next year.
This has been an ongoing issue. I want to talk a little bit about Governor Hassan. All of you have worked extensively with John Lynch over his 8 years in office as governor. And I want to ask our the Republican colleagues here today, in particular, we know the Democratic colleagues have already said that they were quite pleased with the way that Governor Hassan shepherded the budget through the process. But I want to ask the Republican colleagues what it was like working with Governor Hassan in comparison to John Lynch or just in general. And Representative Chandler, let me start with you. Your thoughts about working with Governor Hassan this session.
Well, once again, being in the minority, it isn't like we had a lot of interaction, I don't think, with the governor. We did have early on through the session, some regular meetings on Tuesdays with all of us that are here, basically, which were helpful, I think. Unfortunately, as the session went along, I guess I don't know whether everyone got too busy to have those meetings, but we stopped having them, which was fine. I think the only thing that I found curious through this whole process, and I do once again applaud the Senate for the great job they did on the budget, but was, when the Senate passed that budget, the governor had a lot to say about it, negatively, unfortunately. And then essentially that's what finally got adopted, and then it became a good budget. And I would have liked to have seen a little more leadership maybe from her on the one way or the other on that issue. But overall, she's a very friendly person to work with, certainly. And I've worked with a whole bunch of different governors, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses, and we just move along.
Senator Bragdon, early June, you had a few tense moments with we're going to take a break first, and then we will ask you about Governor Hassan. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about the budget, and we're going to talk about a host of other issues, and we'll start taking your calls as well. So please stay with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. If you know a college student, a young professional, or a local business that's making a difference in their community, why not nominate them for a Rising Stars Award? NHPR and Stay Work Play are accepting nominations for the awards to recognize young people and innovative companies around the state. You can view complete guidelines and submit your nomination by July 26 at nhpr.org. We have a flash flood watch in effect through this afternoon, partly sunny today. Chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may produce some heavy rainfall and gusty winds. Highs today in the 80s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEP Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And from Wentworth Douglas Hospital, supporting healthy communities in the seacoast of New Hampshire and southern Maine, wdhospital.com. It's 9:20. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Today on The Exchange, we're discussing the legislative session with leaders of both parties. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send us a short email to exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And I have 4 guests with me today for our roundtable. Senator Sylvia Larson, Democratic Senate Minority Leader from Concord. Representative Mary Jane Wallner, Democratic Representative from Concord and Chairwoman of the House Finance Committee. Senator Peter Bragdon, Republican State Senate President from Milford. And Representative Gene Chandler, Republican House Minority Leader from Bartlett. And I want to pick up where we left off talking about Governor Hassan's performance. And Senator Bragdon, I mentioned right before the break, in early June, you had a tense exchange with Governor Hassan about across-the-board budget cuts. So just your general reactions to working with her over the past session.
Well, I think that each governor does things differently. When I came into a leadership position, Governor Lynch had been around doing the job for several years and was pretty comfortable where he was. So I think Governor Hassan is coming in new, and everybody's trying to figure out how different people work together. So I was, you know, surprised when the Senate Finance Committee passed its budget that the governor's office issued a press release saying that we are fiscally irresponsible and dangerous and we'll be killing jobs and hurting people and laying off all these people and not providing all these services. In the 8 weeks prior to that, Governor Hassan had not spoken to me once, not a phone call, not a meeting, not any request about the budget. And then she starts to communicate basically criticizing the work the Senate is doing through a press release. When in reality, we're doing some of the same things she had done when she was a senator. And when reality, that budget that passed has all these things that she criticized. So I think it was not a good way to end the session.
And let me actually give our Democratic colleagues a chance to respond. Representative Wallner, your thoughts on the conversation here about Governor Hassan.
Well, I found Governor Hassan very engaged in the budget, actually. Her budget director worked with the House Finance Committee and was there with us throughout the Committee of Conference work, and I found her very engaged in the budget process. I do want to say something about the another issue that is in the budget that I think we dealt with partway but not all the way, and that was that when the budget came over from the Senate, it did have a $50 million reduction in state employees mm-hmm. and state employee benefits. We were not able to work out getting rid of that complete reduction, but we did reduce it to $25 million. But that, for me, is still a concern. Our workforce, our state workforce, is overworked. They are they're taxed. They're
and we're gonna circle back around to talk about state personnel costs in a moment. Senator Larson, any final comments on Governor Hassan?
Of course, I, of all, have worked most closely with former Senator Hassan, now Governor Hassan, and know her to be someone who wonderfully understands the legislative process. Some governors, and I've been in the Senate 19 years, so I've met a few governors. Some of them are not as involved in the legislative process, but she understands the process, understands the steps that need to be taken and the personalities better than some. So I thought she worked well. There were times, of course, when she had to put some fire on the Senate because those budget cuts were worrisome in terms of personnel cuts would have meant large layoffs of state employees and an already reduced workforce. So it worked. With a little heat, we all came to compromise, and that's what a governor should do. So I thought she did a great job.
I want to talk a little bit about spending and revenue in the budget specifically. Let's start on the revenue side. For the Republican colleagues here, are there any conditions at all that you could foresee where it would make sense to raise the gas tax or the cigarette tax? That seemed to be particularly in the Senate, the bottom line, no taxes. I'm just wondering, are there any conditions under which you would ever agree to that? And let's start with you, Senator Bragdon, and then we'll also hear from Representative Chandler.
Well, I think within the Senate, from the Republican perspective, there's a strong majority who would be opposed to an increase in the gas tax, and for various reasons. And I think that's just something we all have to work around. I think we all agree that there are issues to be addressed with our roads and bridges. And I think the biggest disagreement is how do we fund that and how is the money spent? And I think that's one of the good things about taking that issue off the budget side and dealing with it in the second year, just to focus some direct attention onto it, because I think it's an area where everybody agrees there's something we need to do, but there's certainly a good disagreement about how to fund it.
Representative Chandler?
I think from the Republican side in the House, we would strongly oppose any increase in the cigarette tax, first of all, because we really think that especially in our border communities, and we have three sides of our state on border communities, the Vermont side, the Mass side, and the Maine side, and the people that come here for our cigarettes, you can argue whether you should be smoking or not. That's a whole different discussion. Fact of the matter is a lot of people come here to buy cigarettes, and they do a lot of other things. So the money that they spend for gas, food, lodging, all these other things that they may do when they're here, we don't want to see that hurt. And our convenience stores that are along the borders really recognize that fact and plead with us to not do anything to hurt that advantage. Regarding the gas tax, I'm not sure what obviously the gas tax, the big increase, passed the House this time. So I would expect us, if someone comes in with a smaller one, I would expect that to pass. Whether Republicans would be on board with a smaller increase, I'm not 100% sure. We need to do something. Part of the problem is there's always the big question of the so-called diversion. I think we've got a reasonable handle on diversion outside of the boundaries of 6A, which is says that the money shall be used for highways. The problem is we in the House have violated our own law that we passed, saying that we have a 26 or 27% of the highway fund can be used for state troopers, et cetera, et cetera. And we've gone above that. We did it again in this budget. And until we get a handle on that, I don't think people and the citizens are exactly comfortable with raising the gas tax if all of it, or at least what's supposed to be going to the highway fund, isn't. So that's a big issue that needs to be resolved.
Representative Wallner, you were obviously in the center of budget preparations in the House. Governor Hassan, as far as I can tell, never actually came out and proposed an increase in the gas tax, but it was part of the House budget. Your thoughts on whether or not this is essential to do?
Well, I do feel like it's essential to do, and I'm glad to hear President Bragdon say that he thinks it's something that we will be looking at again. There are close to 140 bridges right now on the red line bridges and the red list. And I think that the citizens are concerned, and they want us to do something about the roads and bridges. It's very important to get our citizens to work, to get them to school every day, to get tourists to come into our state. So it's the roads and bridges are part of our economic development, and we need to tend to it. So I'm hope that in the next year of the legislature, we will direct some of our attention to them.
And Senator Larson, let me bring you into the discussion here. You're certainly free to talk about the revenue side, but I want to ask you about education funding. The budget restores funding to the state university system, and for the first time in many years, we have this tuition freeze. But I've heard from a number of Republicans who say that the problem really is the UNH bureaucracy itself, that it's kind of bloated and inefficient and redundant. Are there any changes in the UNH system that you think are necessary, separate from the tuition freeze, that might help us get the most for our state dollars?
Well, I think the university system can always look at itself and see and analyze itself. And certainly the previous two-year budget made significant reductions, and they had to look at salaries and staffing in the administrative offices. But, you know, I think the changes we need to make are investing in education. And I was pleased that the Senate put back in the unique program funds that provide scholarships to students. We've seen student loan rates going up federally, but in the state we restored the scholarship monies that had been used previously to fund the university's just operations. This goes back to where it belongs. It was private money from investments, and it was never meant to support the buildings or operations of the university. So I was pleased that we got all of the scholarship monies that come in from the unique program back into where they should be, which is for students most in need. The university itself, I think, needs the investment because there are innovators. They're what keeps youth in our state, and hopefully we keep them here after they graduate. Those are some of the focuses we need to keep at. I think this budget puts some attention to human capital investment, but I think next year and the years ahead, we need to focus on our infrastructure investment. I think most people expect that we are recognizing what generations to come need. And in my district in Warner, a red listed bridge came down in the flood just a few days ago, the poster bridge of why we need to invest in our infrastructure now. And I think there needs to be some compromise, just as we compromised on the budget.
Well, we have the Sewell's Fall Bridge here, Sewell's Fall Bridge in Concord, that's closed and is a very old
another,
structure.
Yeah. Another poster bridge.
Yeah. Senator Bragdon, this criticism that I mentioned, I heard mainly from Republican senators. So your reaction to the restoring funding to UNH and where they go from here.
Yeah, I do think there was concern about the overall bureaucracy for the university system. The central office had a lot of what seemed to be a high percent of people with very large salaries as compared to what might be seen in other places. I think the study in contrast is the community college system versus the university system. Both systems took drastic cuts in the prior budget, difficult decisions that had to be made. Yet the community college system decided, despite that, we're going to hold our tuition the same, whereas UNH said, oops, we've got to raise tuition. So there does seem to be a difference in attitude, or at least there did seem to have been a difference in attitudes between the two systems. And the community college system seems more nimble and able to adjust and able to reduce their cost of doing things while still providing services. And I think we don't see quite the level of results from UNH.
I want to fold in the discussion of these state personnel costs. Representative Wallner, you mentioned this, that there's been this discussion of about a $10 million reduction in state personnel costs that is required after this compromise. I heard Republican Senator Chuck Morris, who does the Finance Committee in the Senate, say that this can be done without layoffs. I've heard something different from Democrats. I'd like to hear your take on how this $10 million gets taken out.
Well, I think that that's something that we're still going to – it's going to take a little while to really do an evaluation of where we are. It's only the 10th day of July. I think that the governor will look very closely to not having to do it with layoffs. But when you're talking about 25 – it's really a $25 million. It's $10 million in general funds. 25 total.
Total.
When you're looking at a $25 million reduction in the back of the budget that has to be done through personnel and benefits, you are going to have to look at the workforce very closely. And it's going to take a lot of very close management in the next over the next biennium to be sure that that back of the budget is reached. So I think to say whether how it's going to happen exactly right now is a little premature. I'm sure it's something that every department is evaluating how they can manage that.
Representative Chandler, you've served for a long time. Your sense of whether this can be done without layoffs?
Well, I think it probably can, and I think I echo what Representative Wallner said, that it is going to take a close look at all departments, and I think that's a good thing. I think we need to do that. I think the governor needs to do that and see how she comes up with that. Certainly this isn't anything unusual out of the ordinary for a budget to have these back of the budget cuts. And I mean, I don't say that every budget has it, but I suspect they probably all have some, a little bit, maybe not quite this magnitude, but it's something that always has been dealt with, and I suspect it will be this time.
Let's go to the phones. We have Justin joining us from Nashua. Justin, welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me today.
Your question.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the motor fuel tax here in New Hampshire and a small change that would allow the state to garner more tax revenue from federal government purchases without an increased burden on consumers or businesses. The federal government is exempt from any tax, the direct incidence of which falls on the government. And New Hampshire, like about 40 other states, has a motor fuel tax that's a tax on the purchaser. But, of course, the seller collects the tax, the seller does the paperwork, and then the seller remits it to the state. In about 10 or so states, including Montana and Wyoming, they have what's called a transactional privilege tax, which is a tax on the seller per gallon. The seller does the paperwork, remits the tax to the state, and then, of course, what the seller immediately does is they fold that into their cost of gas on the posted price, and they collect it from all of a purchaser's as an indirect incidence, including the federal government. And so that includes gas purchases from the United States Postal Service, federal civilian agencies, any military footprint, for a wide variety of fuel types. And I just wanted to see if there was any interest in maybe making a change like that, which wouldn't result in a huge amount of revenue, but it would be reliable every year revenue without an increased burden elsewhere.
Okay, Justin, let's see what the roundtable has to say. Let me start with you, Senator Larson, and let me also fold into Justin's question this issue of whether or not an increase in the gas tax would necessarily be passed along to consumers. But your reaction to Justin.
Well, it's interesting. That's the first I've heard of this transactional tax. And I think it's one worth looking at. We always try to look at other states and how they're doing things. So I've made a note of this, and I hope we can have that discussion and do some research on it. I do think certainly if there are ways to pull in additional revenues for our highways without turning to the consumer, that's great. We've seen consumers using ever-increasing fuel efficiency cars, which means that we're declining revenues just from that intent. So we do need to be creative and look at those kinds of things.
Senator Bragdon, your response to the proposal?
Like Senator Larson, it was something I haven't heard of before. And when I see Senator Rausch, our transportation chairman, it's something I'll ask him about to take a look at and just consider. I do know, like I said earlier, that we all, I think, agree there's issues with roads and bridges to be dealt with and looking for different ways to do it. And so it's always good to have different ideas to kick around.
And Justin, thank you for that call. I want to switch gears and talk a bit about Medicaid expansion. We have this compromise that came out of the budget with an October 15th deadline for a study commission, and the commission just met recently for the first time. And I actually want to start with the Republican colleagues here. I've been trying to understand what it is exactly that needs to be studied. My sense of the conflict was a concern that the Obama administration would not fully fund the expansion of Medicaid in the state. And, you know, that's essentially something that you either believe or you don't. But there seems to be this argument that there needs to be a commission to kind of study Medicaid. And so I just want to get a better sense of what is going to sort of tip the balance one way or the other in this study. And actually, let me go back to first to you, Senator Bragdon, and then we'll work our way around here.
Well, a number of concerns. Obviously, I just processed a bill that's going to the governor. It's probably been signed by now to set up a committee to study scrap metal dealers in New Hampshire. And so you would think something as critical and important as large as Medicaid expansion would at least have somebody look at it before we do it. If we're going to have somebody look at scrap metal yards, we should at least be discussing thoroughly some significant policy issues. There were a number of concerns regarding Medicaid expansion, some of which dealt with the financial thing, as you pointed out. But I think foundationally it was this. What is best for New Hampshire? If our goal is to provide better health care for low-income people, to reduce the use of emergency rooms for the primary care provider, and to reduce uncompensated care costs for hospitals, then let's make sure that Medicaid expansion will do that, because there's some evidence to suggest from other states that when Medicaid is expanded, those things don't happen. So let's see exactly what we're getting, and are there ways that we can tailor this for New Hampshire that would help us take most advantage of that? The proposal that we had from the governor in the budget was basically what's called a plain vanilla Medicaid expansion that the president wants to do. And, you know, perhaps there's ways we can change that. But once we get in, it's going to be more difficult to change it. So
we need to take one more quick break. Coming up, we'll continue talking about Medicaid. We'll also talk about casino gambling, and we'll take your calls and emails. So please stay with us.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, same-sex marriage in the States. Then the latest spy novel by Daniel Silva. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, we have a flash flood watch in effect through this afternoon. Partly sunny today, chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms could produce some heavy rainfall and gusty winds, highs today in the 80s. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the law firm of Donahue Tucker and Chandela, offering legal representation to New Hampshire businesses, individuals, and municipalities with offices in Exeter, Portsmouth, and Meredith. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Dean Spiliotis. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Email us your questions before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today we're looking back on the 2013 legislative session. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. And I want to go back now to continue talking about Medicaid expansion. Representative Wallner, do you think we need to have this commission study, or should we have just gone ahead and voted on it?
Well, I think that having the commission study will hopefully show the Senate how important this is, how important Medicaid expansion is. So if we need to slow down and take a little bit of time to do the study, I think that's all right. I'm okay with that. And I think we came out in the Committee of Conference on the Budget with a pretty good compromise about the dates and when the study would be done, and that we will have a report in the middle of October. But we do have 58,000 low-income, mostly working people out there that have no health insurance. This is an opportunity for them to be covered through Medicaid. The federal government will be paying for this 100% for the next 3 years. And I think this is something that we need to move forward on. Possibly there is some sort of a New Hampshire spin that we can put on it. Maybe there's another way of looking at it that's a little bit New Hampshire unique. But I think right now we need to be ready so that in January we can have an opportunity for these 58,000 people to have an opportunity to be covered for health care.
And Representative Chandler, let me go to you, but let me just mention in passing, we have an email from Ned from Randolph, and he's not happy about this commission. In fact, he references you, Senator Bragdon. He says, we don't need some politically stacked study committee to allow Senator Bragdon and his colleagues to delay and obfuscate the issue any further. So strong feelings from Ned from Randolph. Thank you for that email.
Well, let's hear from you. First of all, if it's politically stacked, it's politically stacked the other side, other than Senator Bragdon and myself, certainly. But nonetheless, I think it will provide some facts, and I think that's the key thing. One of the things that has been brought to my attention, we talk about the 58,000 to 60,000 people who don't have insurance. Well, that's not true. I think it's about 40,000 of those people now have insurance, which would go on this system to be paid for by the taxpayer. That's a huge thing. The federal government, yes, they've promised to pay 100% of this for 3 years and then 90%. I don't think there's a whole lot of people, well, there are some, who have that much faith in the federal government based on past performances that that's going to follow through. And even if they do that, the cost of the state of New Hampshire is about $50 million a year to implement this thing. So there are a lot of concerns, and there are still a lot of questions which have been unanswered up until now. So from that point of view, I think this commission, you can argue which side is politically stacked on, but hopefully no matter what, there'll be a majority and a minority report, I'm sure, but a lot of the facts will come out, and then people can judge it on the facts. And that's why I agree with Senator Bragdon that it's important to do this.
Yes, so. And I should mention that Americans for Prosperity came out and, in fact, said the committee is stacked in the other direction. So there is debate about which way it's stacked. Senator Bragdon, do you want to defend yourself here a moment?
Well, I don't think I think the emailer really doesn't know what he's talking about, to be frank. The committee is not stacked. It's got 9 members, 5 appointed by Democrats and 4 appointed by Republicans. So it's a committee that reflects the divisions in the legislature and the governor's office, and I think that's the important thing to have to make sure the issues are discussed. And like I said, we just want to be able to, if we expand Medicaid, take advantage as best we can of things that can make it tailored to New Hampshire. And it's worth talking about that. It's something that wasn't talked about. Again, if we're going to talk about scrap metal dealers, let's talk about substantive things.
If I could just add one thing.
Yeah, briefly, and then Senator Larson,
I think that's important to note. Whether it's 5-4 or not, this committee isn't going to be able to do anything on its own other than issue a report. And everyone on that committee, no matter what they feel about it, they'll be able to ask the questions, find out the facts, and report on that in one fashion or another, which then it'll be laid out before the people of New Hampshire and the House and the Senate, and informed decisions can be made.
Senator Larson, your thoughts.
And I would just remind people that this is a $2.5 billion program. Many of the studies, the Lewin study, as an additional economist in Massachusetts study, showed significant revenues to our state, which offset any costs. 5,000 jobs estimated to come with Medicaid expansion. And for every day that we do not pass Medicaid expansion within the January 1 start date, we lose $1 million in potential affordability of health care to people in our state. I would remind people, too, that the state will save money before treatment of mental health. It will save money for – it will add money for substance abuse treatment, which we all know is a significant need in our state. It will save corrections money because Medicaid will then pay for some of the folks in our prisons who are currently being paid for by our own state tax dollars. So there's a lot of benefit in there to our citizens and our budget.
So I think we're going to all be looking forward to this report in October to see what happens, and perhaps we'll have a vote. After that, I want to remind our listeners you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us, exchange@nhpr.org, and we're having a legislative leader roundtable today. I want to switch gears now and talk about casino gambling. A lot of people emailing and calling today about casino gambling. Tom in Portsmouth wants to know how Governor Hassan might rebuild any political capital that she expended on the losing casino effort. Christopher wants to know how you feel about the bipartisan manner in which the House came together to defeat casino gambling. And let's actually start with a call on this subject, then we'll get into all of these issues. On the phone is Bobby from Bedford. Bobby, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning.
Your question, please.
Yeah, it's more of a comment, but it does have to do with the casino money. There would seem to be sort of a moral issue brought up with the casino gambling, the license for casino gambling. And unlike the taking the test, you know, they're going to do a committee to make sure with Medicaid they're not going to accept it till they're so sure. They could have taken the money and waited 20 years to figure out what the impact was. On the one hand, they find that completely immoral. On the second hand, we just heard some of your congressmen, our congressmen, say with the cigarettes that was so important. There was nothing moral about people coming across the border to make New Hampshire their own place. They're going to get liquor or tobacco. But for gambling, it was considered a sin. And, of course, the discussing that they didn't take the money for Medicaid but follow the dollars. That's probably Koch brothers' money going into these conservatives' pockets so they'll refuse the Medicaid.
Okay, Bobby, let's get the legislative leaders back in to talk about casino gambling. Thank you for your call. Representative Wallner, let me start with you. This is obviously a very emotional issue for people. For some people, it's an economic issue. For others, it's a moral issue. Your take on the future of casino gambling?
Well, casino gambling and any kind of expanded gambling actually had a history in the House of not passing. I mean, this has been going on for several years. We've seen many, many different proposals that have come forward, and they have historically been defeated in the House. This year, the Speaker put together two committees, the Ways and Means Committee and the Finance Committee, and we spent 5 weeks, 45 people, 5 weeks looking at the bill that came over from the Senate and looking at really delving into the issue of casino gambling. And we had three subcommittees. We looked at the social impact. We looked at regulations. And we looked at the financial impact of casino gambling. At the end of that, when it went back on the floor, again, casino gambling went down. I think there was a lot of study done. One thing that was one of the strongest issues that came out of that study that we did for the 5 weeks was that New Hampshire really lacks any sort of regulations at this point to regulate expanded gambling. And in the budget that we just passed, we have allowed a commission that was in past budgets to continue for another year that will look at very closely at this issue around expanded gambling regulations. So though the caller was talking about moral issues, really I think what came out of that study in the Finance and Ways and Means Committee was that the state was really not ready, and this particular bill was not ready for prime time.
Representative Chandler, the coalition opposing gambling and, in fact, supporting gambling, not your typical Republican versus Democratic type of coalition. A little bit about how you think it plays out in the future.
Well, I think that there'll always be the coalitions, and I think that the coalition against expanded gambling has been a mixed bag. It has Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Conservatives. It has any number of people. As the same on the opposite side, the people that are for it. So that's always going to be an issue. And I think a number of people voted. There was always a reason that people had to vote against this bill. Some of it was they didn't like the idea that it created a monopoly for just one facility in one location. Others felt, as Representative Wallner said, more important, I think, was the lack of oversight or regulations and who was going to be doing the oversight. So that was a concern. And those concerns will still linger as we go along. So, and I'm sure we'll see it back again, judging by the phone calls I've had already from people. So there's going to be, I suspect, probably two or three different measures that will come up.
And let me ask the senators. Obviously, the Senate was in favor or passed casino gambling. Senator Larson, let me start with you, the future of casino gambling in the state.
Well, I believe that it is important to create a good regulatory environment if we're going to expand gambling in our state. And I have no problem with the study that's in the budget and reviving that. That was created a few years back, and I think it does need regulatory guidelines. We already know we have large amounts of charitable gaming in this state, and we do not regulate probably as well as we should, the amounts of monies that are going to the operators versus the amount that goes to the proposed charities that are participating. So I think we have a state that needs, we need to pay some attention to this. And then I am one who's evolved as a legislator from listening to constituents primarily, with 64% of the population thinking that casino gambling is another source of revenue that they would accept. I have moved my own personal position on it. I'm not gung-ho on the topic, but I do think it's probably a mix which is already in New Hampshire as revenue sources and one which we better get a handle on and we can do a better job of overseeing if we pay attention to it. I have very little problem with restoring what had been racetracks with gambling to another popular form of gambling. That's what we're moving towards, and I think if we can find a path to make that happen, it's revenue that we can use and one which the state can tolerate without a great loss of moral issues or crime otherwise.
Senator Bragdon, the question for me has always been, as Representative Chandler said, you know, you're always going to have these coalitions. Are these just people voting their core preferences, or are there things in the future that can be adjusted in the legislation? You know, is this an issue of the bidding process or the regulatory infrastructure or the impact on surrounding towns and competing venues? You know, are people movable on this, or are we basically seeing, as Representative Chandler said, just these are the coalitions that are always going to be there?
Well, I think Representative Chandler is right. The coalitions will always be there, but there is some degree of movement on these things as well. So those who are concerned about the monopoly aspect of it, then perhaps some things could be changed would address their concerns. So I think there's some movement around the edges, but I do think there are camps that are made up members of both parties that are strongly for it and those that are strongly against it. And I think you'll always have that. I don't think it's going to be a partisan issue. I think it's something that you may see some movement on. I suspect if there was a bill coming again this year, it probably passes the Senate again. And then the House will, you know, do their thing.
Well, we basically have about 3 minutes left. I want to go around the table one final time and ask each of you to kind of put next year in the context of a midterm election year. The assumption is Governor Hassan will be running for reelection. What do you think the big issues are going to be? What are you looking to move on next year? Those sorts of insights. And let's start with you, Representative Chandler.
Well, obviously, we just finished one, which is going to be a big issue, and that's casino gambling. I have no doubt there will probably be two or three bills in the House and at least one or two in the Senate in dealing with these in various ways, either more casinos, just slot machines, any number of things. So that's going to be a big issue, as the Medicaid expansion issue will be a big one also. So,
do you foresee the Medicaid expansion issue kind of dragging on, or do you think this report will bring some closure one way or the other?
I think it will bring some closure. I'm just not sure how soon that closure will come. That's all.
So we may end up talking about this in November of 2014?
Well, I don't know about that long, but we may in January and February.
Representative Wallner, the other side of the aisle in the House, what are you looking forward to next year?
Well, I would agree with Representative Chandler that I think Medicaid expansion will be in the forefront of what we're doing, and hopefully we'll get that done by January and be able to move forward. Roads and bridges, I think that's going to come back. I think we need to talk about that. We're going to really need to talk about that.
Certainly a pressing issue, yes.
Yes, and I think that really think that we are going to have to continue to take a look at our mental health system. Mm-hmm. There's been some incidents that have happened over the last couple of weeks in our state that are very concerning, and I think that that's a place that we need to continue to work on that, and we were able to address part of it in the budget with some additional funds, but I think we need to continue.
Senator Bragdon, we only have less than a minute. Just sort of from you and Senator Larson, a quick thing you'll be looking forward to next year.
Well, I do think major policy discussions next year will be the transportation-related issues, the condition of the roads and bridges, and I also think Medicaid expansion will be a significant policy issue. In terms of the election, it always seems to boil down to jobs and the economy and spending and taxes, and I think we no surprise that'll be the main focuses in November of 2014.
And Senator Larson, you get the last word here.
Well, I think we're wise to focus on jobs and the economy. We got to keep an eye on the budget. We also need to, make sure that our state employees are able to do the job we've asked them to do, and certainly Medicaid expansion and highways, casinos, all the things mentioned.
We are out of time. I'm sure we're all going to be watching what happens in the fall with Medicaid and on into 2014. I'd like to thank all of my guests for a provocative and enjoyable hour. Senator Sylvia Larson, a Democratic Senate Minority Leader from Concord. Senator Larson, thanks for joining us today.
It's been great to be here, Dean.
And Representative Wallner, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Mary Jane Wallner is Democratic Representative from Concord and Chairwoman of the House Finance Committee. Senator Bragdon, thanks for being here as well.
Pleasure to be here.
That's Peter Bragdon, Republican State Senate President from Milford. And finally, Representative Gene Chandler. Thank you so much for joining
Always
us.
Always a pleasure.
Gene Chandler is Republican House Minority Leader from Bartlett. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and Alan Cohen. Our interns are Kate Mikesill and Catherine Muzzy. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Dean Spiliotis from Southern New Hampshire University, sitting in for Laura Kanoy.